the Kristen and Chill podcast. I think you guys got that part by the logo on the show that you just clicked on. But just in case you didn't see it, this is Mentally Chill. No, it's not. It's Kristen and Chill. God damn it. I do that all the time. And actually, I think that's a good example of how we just regurgitate what our brain already knows and is programmed to do. If you say you hate yourself over and over for years and years and years, you may not really, but because that's what you've carved out in your brain, that's where it will default to. That's what's easy and most comfortable. Like, it's the easiest and most comfortable thing for my brain to say mentally chill. Because Kristen and Chill, what? I have my own show? That's not possible. That cannot be. But here we are. It is true. It's a thing. It's real. And today my guest is quite a jerk. She beats herself up all the time. She never lets herself be happy. And she eats like a poor college student. And not like a college student that's having fun partying and just needs to get Taco Bell because they're hungover. But like the weird shut-in college student who slurps ramen and has it trickling down their chin as they play video games. I'm eating like that kind of college student. Kristen Carney, everybody. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I am so unenthused to be here. Oh, I'm unenthused you're here. Awesome. So it's just going to be me, myself, and you guys. You thought I was going to say I, didn't you? No, me, myself, and you guys. Not me, myself, and I this week. And the reason, or reasons I should say, is number one, people enjoy shows when I do them alone, which I will never understand, and I'm not even trying to understand, but I'm accepting. Number two, I'm in the middle of nowhere, and it's really hard to get a guest here, and as you guys know, I hate taping over the computer or the phone. And number three, I've been feeling really depressed, so I think it's probably not a great decision to do an episode alone because it's isolating, and I'm already isolated, but that's where I can really milk this depression thing. If I had a guest, I would feel weird talking about myself to them the whole time. No, I wouldn't. What am I talking about? Anyway, I'm depressed and I'm alone. So I figure it's a good time to talk about it. But I'm not going to talk about it quite yet. I know that's a big cliffhanger. You guys cannot wait to hear what I'm going to say about being depressed. I'm going to hold off on that because I'm going to do the new format of the show, but alone. So that means I'll be doing the segments, Things I Tell My Therapist, Socially Challenged, and Sweat the Small Stuff. And before I get to that, look at this, a double cliffhanger. I'm going to talk to you guys real quick about Patreon. Support me on Patreon, just like my newest children on there, Children, get it? C-H-I-L-L-D-R-E-N. Michelle and Peter, follow their lead at patreon.com/Kristen and Chill. Okay, that's my talk about Patreon. Now on to Things I'd Tell My Therapist. So the first thing I would tell my therapist, is the list is getting long. I'll start light and then go heavy. I'll work up to the depression stuff. But the first thing that I would tell my therapist that sounds like I should actually just tell my ophthalmologist, except he already told me, so that wouldn't make any sense, is that I went to the ophthalmologist and found out that I have this thing called GPC for short, which is giant papillary conjunctivitis. Now, the giant is a little insulting. We could do without the giant part. Papillary, okay, we need that for science. Conjunctivitis kind of makes it sound like an STD, which it's not because it's in my eye. But if it was in my eye and was an STD, man, oh man, would I be having an incredibly fun sex life. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Actually, fortunately, I don't want to have a sex life that involves eyes. I don't care. I would never be fun enough for that. And I wouldn't want to be fun enough for that. Anyway, so I'll tell you the story and then I'll tell you why I'm telling my therapist about this. About a year and a half ago, two years ago in April, I got an ulcer on my eyeball from overuse of my contacts, most likely. The ulcer was incredibly painful. It felt like I had glass in my eye, and not even tempered glass, just shards. And these shards would make good shark teeth. That's how sharp and pointy they felt. And I made it about 3 or 4 days until I was like, okay, I think I might need to go to the doctor, perhaps, maybe there's something wrong. And so it healed probably within a couple weeks of the eye drops. And then a few months later in September, I started to feel like I had sand in my eye. And of course, being a procrastinator, I like to say, oh, well, I thought it would take care of itself, but it wasn't that I thought it would take care of itself. It was just that I was really being a procrastinator and didn't go to the doctor until December for it. But I just assumed it was part of the ulcer thing and maybe it was some residual thing happening. And so I go in December and the ophthalmologist says, oh, you just have chronic dry eye. Here are some eye drops. Or, well, here's a prescription for some eye drops. And that prescription was basically for like no name brand clear eyes, essentially, or, you know, like Visine. It was not for anything special or magical, because I just assume medicine is magical. And it did nothing. So then I stopped using it because it was a waste. It just didn't seem to do anything except mess up my mascara. And frankly, my tears were just getting a little jealous of the drops, because that's their job. So I just stopped using it and then let it go. And I think so many of us do that to our mental health. We try one thing, it didn't work, forget it. And then we just let it go until it gets worse and worse and worse. And I never learned from the last time I let something just get worse and worse and worse. I know it's not going to get better. But for some reason, we convince ourselves that this time, it'll get better on its own. This one's going to be the one. It's every time you get like a scratch-off ticket. You're like, this time it's going to be the one. And then 30 seconds later, that one is in the garbage. We don't learn from patterns. And then the next week, we go out and spend $10 more on stupid scratch-off tickets. At least I do. That's where my Patreon money is going. I'm trying to double my Patreon money. See what I'm doing there? I'm just trying to, you know, bigger risk, bigger reward kind of thing, right? Anyway, don't take financial advice from me. The whole point of this story is that I let it go because I took the one doctor's word for it that I had chronic dry eye. I don't have chronic dry eye. I have GPC, giant papillary, am I saying that right? That sounded wrong. No, yeah, giant papillary conjunctivitis. I was just really enunciating the Larry part of it. Giant papillary David conjunctivitis. I'd have that. That's what I prefer to have. But what I do have is essentially my eyelid is covered in, not the top part, but underneath where it goes over my cornea, is covered with bumps, like pimple-like bumps. They're not pimples. This is not puberty of the eyeball, but they basically look like little pimples, and they're from overuse of contacts also, most likely, or from my ulcer scratching my eyelid, but it's an irritation, and it causes all these bumps on your eye. And so when I wear my contacts, I'm pretty comfortable because I can't feel the scratching of my eyelid over my eye, but when I take my contacts out, it's really uncomfortable. Anyway, long story short, the reason I am talking about this for things I tell my therapist. One, sympathy. Please send me messages on Instagram at Chris Karn about how you feel bad for me. But number two is because I have to wear my glasses for the next month and I went into a pure panic. I never wear my glasses in public. I've never worn my glasses in public since I was 11 years old. I mean, I've worn them like to run out to the car or something. And the glasses that I have worn in public have been non-prescription glasses, like fake asshole glasses. The reason I don't wear my actual glasses in public is because they make my eyes look really big. And not like, ooh, she has big eyes, pretty, but like, does she have a learning disability big? Which honestly might not be far off. But the reason wearing my glasses in public is so traumatic and scary for me is because I have a thing called accommodative esotropia, which in layman's terms means lazy-eyed dweeb. That's what it is in translation to regular language. And the reason glasses are scary for someone like me with accommodative esotropia, I'll say it three more times to sound smart, accommodative esotropia, that's really hard to say three times. Accommodative esotropia. I want you guys to say that three times. Record yourself saying it three times and then send it to me. But the reason it's scary to wear glasses is because there's no barrier between my eye crossing and the general public seeing it. Because the minute my glasses come off, my eye can cross. And so as a kid, the most horrific thing was someone saying, hey, can I try on your glasses? No, you can't try on my glasses. I'd always try to say, well, you might stretch them out with that big head of yours. or you might drop them and then I'll have to call my lawyer and have you pay for them. But it was all just a ruse because I didn't want to take off my glasses because then my eye would cross. And so when I wear my glasses in public, I feel like I am one step away from my eye crossing and people seeing it. Whereas when I have my contacts in, it's more permanent. No one walks up to me and says, hey, can I try your contacts on? Although I challenge some of you to do that. That would be really weird. Obviously, they'd know you're kidding. But this is why I didn't work for Jackass or a prank show. I'm not very good at pranks. Anyway, that's what is very scary to me, is that I have to be in public with my eye out. It feels like being in public naked. If my glasses fall for some reason, hopefully there's no reason why my glasses would just fall off. I wouldn't hopefully lose my ears for them to have nothing to latch onto anymore. But that's the fear, is that some unknown thing or situation will occur where I will not have my glasses and I will be exposed. And really, it's so bad that I think I would rather be naked in public, like actually naked, than without my glasses or contacts and have that be revealed. Because at least if I'm naked, it's like, oh, well, you know, she got two boobs, small, albeit, but boobs nonetheless, a belly button, two legs, everything's in place. She probably could have shaved, but, you know, sometimes razors just aren't strong enough for that kind of job. And it would be less painful because I'm normal. But when it comes to my eye, I'm not normal. And it's a horrible feeling. And it's a powerless feeling. And I feel vulnerable. And luckily, though, I had randomly bought new glasses last week because mine are so scratched and so cloudy that I can barely see through them. And I've been wearing them like that forever. And last week, I thought any self-respecting adult, not that I am one, but any self-respecting adult would get themselves new glasses. This isn't something that is like a whim or I'm just wasting my money getting manicures. It's glasses, so you can see. So last week, I went and picked some out. Really good timing because I called today and I said, hey, so I just found out I have giant papillary David conjunctivitis and I need my glasses. I was wondering if you could tell me the status of my glasses that I ordered. And the girl put me on hold and then came back a few minutes later and was like, oh yeah, they're in. And it's like, okay, cool. Why didn't you tell me that before? But I'm glad I called. So anyway, I went over, got my new glasses so I can see. But this is going to be a very, very stressful month for me, having to wear my glasses. I have to go on a date in glasses. Do you know what that is? I'd rather go without makeup, which is saying a lot. That's how very little I want to wear my glasses in public. But I'm going to actually use this experience as something therapeutic because I'm going to see that for the next month I survive. I mean, watch me just get hit by a car and now I don't survive, and the irony of me saying that. But I'll see that I did survive. My glasses maybe fell off because I lost my ears, but I'm still here. And a whole crowd didn't point and laugh, just my brother did. And I'm okay, and I'll get through this. But it's funny, too, because all of a sudden I think, well, what about the gym? I never go to the gym. I'm like, well, I can't work out with with glasses on. All of a sudden, because I have to wear my glasses, I am now a fitness guru and need to go to the gym and cannot wear my glasses. That's what my first question was to the ophthalmologist. And I like saying ophthalmologist rather than doctor. It's an ophthalmologist. I bet he, in public, says he's an ophthalmologist and not a doctor. There's something about the ologist thing. And actually, speaking of that, there's a podcast called Ologies, which is very good. I don't know the host. She doesn't know me. I'm not promoting this. This was just a random happenstance referral. And she talks about all different ologies. But there is something about an ologist. Ology, it sounds impressive. Anyway, wish me luck. If you see me without glasses on social media or something, that is because the picture was taken prior. I'm going to try to do a very good job and stick to this. And like I said, use it as a therapy lesson and almost, exposure therapy, like an exposure therapy. I'll survive. I'll be fine. And again, I hope I do survive and that this doesn't play out to be tragically ironic. Fingers crossed. All right, on to the second thing on the agenda for things I would tell my therapist. And thing number two is that I've been really, really, really depressed lately. And it sucks because I'd been doing really, really well. And when I say really, really, really well, I mean just okay. But when you're depressed, just okay feels really, really, really good. And for sake of drama, if I go from feeling just okay to bad, it's not as interesting for entertainment purposes. So for entertainment purposes, I was doing amazing. I was killing it. I was really shooting for the stars and hitting them for the first time. No, I was aiming for more like the basketball hoops and landing amongst like the pole, but still I was aiming for something. And now I'm just aiming for the bed. The good thing about aiming for the bed though is that you never miss. So you feel more confident because you're aiming for something and you're achieving it. So it's some sort of positive reinforcement. And now that I say that, this may sound like a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think would be more helpful to you psychologically? If you said, I'm aiming to sleep all week, and you do that and you achieve that, or you say, I'm aiming to get a really good job, and you don't even land an interview, which one helps your self-esteem more? I think they both ruin it. I think they're both terrible. It's a really, really dumb question. Anyway, what I've realized with depression is there's points along the map, almost little pins in the map, your life map, and at each point is where like a new goal or a new feeling of purpose starts. And as you go from one of those points to the other on the map, you go through some hills, some rocky parts, some good straight roads where nothing goes wrong, but then you get back into some more hills and some things that take more energy. And then you get to that next point and you get invigorated again because there's another thing around the corner. And the reason I'm using this little analogy or talking about this is because I think when I changed my podcast or this podcast over to Kristen and Chill from Mentally Chill, that was like a little pin on the map where I felt like, here's something to reinvigorate me and to reinvent me a little bit and to give me more gasoline to get to the next thing in life. And I rode that. So it's May now. This makes sense. So I rode that from January until May and then started to feel kind of down in May. So I think I'm looking for that next point on the map to feel like I'm moving forward or the next thing is happening. And so rather than feel upset about being depressed, I'm looking at it right now in this juncture. I mean, like 5 minutes from now, I won't look at it like this, or when I'm not talking, I won't look at it like this. But I think I'm okay with the ebbs and flows because that's how I'm looking at it as a human feeling. Because it really would be very strange to just be constantly feeling well every single month of every single year. Although I say that and I want to backtrack because maybe it wouldn't be weird. Maybe it would be totally normal and good. But I look at this lull right now as the quiet before the good storm, before the rains come to bring the flowers, or the rain is happening to bring the flowers. That's so cheesy. Please, let's never tell anyone I said that at all, that I used a April showers brings May flowers analogy on this podcast. Actually, I'm just going to erase this whole podcast right now. I think I'll go back and delete. But I think there is some truth to that. And so I'm just waiting out the storm. But while the storm is happening, I'm not being complacent. You know, if it was raining and downpouring and there was holes in the roof, I would be fixing the roof. Well, not like fixing it. I'd probably just be putting a tarp over it. But hey, that's me. I'm just lazy. I would just be putting a tarp over it, whereas other people would probably be physically building a brand new, beautifully well-made roof. I don't feel like I have that in me. And I never know if that's my depression or if that's my laziness, but my brain just gets so tired so quickly when something feels big or overwhelming. So if someone said, it's raining, you have to make a new roof, I would probably let myself get drenched. So this analogy may not be the best. But if someone said, it's raining, you can throw a tarp over it, and then you can hire someone to actually fix the roof once it dries, then you can do that. I would say, okay, I'll do that. I wish I was the person that was building stuff from scratch, but I'm not. And I don't know if that's ever going to change. I feel like it's genetic. I really do feel like it's genetic, and I'm blaming my dad for it. Because my dad, he's not a problem solver. He's a problem avoider, a very funny one, albeit, but a problem avoider nonetheless. And it's always patching over things to make them better. It's not ever learning the correct process to really build something and do it right. My dad used to own apartment buildings houses that were split up into apartments. Very groundbreaking thing I'm explaining here. And the apartments were fine. They were maintained fine, but they were just always like, you know, kind of like a half-assed thing. But I don't know if, you know, that's okay. I mean, it must be okay because, you know, people paid rent and they weren't living in squalor by any means. But my dad never went in and had them revamped and redone and gutted. It was just kind of add over, you know, what's crummy, put like a, you know, a shower thing in that's the bath fitter thing or something rather than do a whole new bathtub. And so, again, I'm blaming him for me not building a new roof. And there is a point at which you need to stop blaming your parents for things in life. But I have not hit that point yet. So still riding the blame train. And so it's his fault that I'm doing the tarp. Anyway, I have been doing the tarp over the roof to block the rain by doing things like I increased my dosage of my antidepressant. I have been doing more headstands, which you can see on my Instagram, which I know is ridiculous. I have made sure to take my dog on a walk every morning and a long walk, not just a quick one around the block, but an actual walk. And please keep in mind, I use the word morning very loosely. This is probably like mid-afternoon. I have also forced myself to listen to podcasts because I don't listen to podcasts. I don't know if you guys know that. I think I may have said that. I don't listen to podcasts. I hear myself talk enough. I don't want to hear someone else like me talking because I know who I am. I did say this, I think, because I think I used the same joke. And believe it or not, that was a joke. As unfunny as it was a joke. So I've forced myself to listen to podcasts. I actually have been listening to one called Happier with Gretchen. What is it? Happier with Gretchen Rubin. And I've been getting into a routine, but it's really frustrating because I say all this and it makes it sound like, you know, oh, you're doing things, you're fine. But it's all very, very difficult and takes so much will. And I really have to push myself to do it. I'm not waking up easily. Every morning I am struggling waking up. And as you know, as I just talked about aiming for the bed, when I wake up in the morning, I have now gotten into an even worse habit, which I seem to do when I'm even feeling okay. But my habit is I wake up, 8:30, 9, and I go back to sleep. It's now before it was like a thing where I was like, okay, well, just today I'll go back to sleep and force myself to go back to sleep because I'm not ready to start the day. And it seemed more temporary. But I've kind of accepted that what I do is I wake up when my body wants to wake up, and then I force myself to sleep because I am not ready to start the day. Because sleeping, it goes by so fast. It feels like I just took a 45-minute nap. I'm like, I'm not ready to redo what I was just doing yesterday all over again yet. It's too soon. It's way too soon. And I don't know how people do it every day. I just don't. So this has now become not just a thing where I'm like, oh, let's go back to sleep. It is what I do. It is a habit and it's very, very bad. This morning, I did, though, make some progress because I woke up at like 9 or 9:30 and I in my head. I get so stubborn in the morning. It's almost like drunk you. When you know drunk you's like, no, I'm good. I can drive. I know what I'm doing. When I wake up in the morning, it's like drunk me. Where I'm like, no, I can go back to sleep. I don't need to start the day yet. I don't have this or that. And I talk myself out of anything positive. And I convince myself of it. And it's like, you know you're talking yourself out of doing the positive thing, but you're so on the side of the bad angel on your shoulder, like that you don't care. You're talking yourself out of something good. But this morning I woke up 9:30 and my bad angel was like, yep, you're going back to bed. And I'm like, yeah, that's just what I do and that's what I'm gonna do. And then my dog, the dog, who I've said before, I can't say my dog because my dog died and she is my dog, but like my brother's dog, whatever. You guys know the story. And she jumped off of the bed, like right when I had woken up, and she barked. And normally she sleeps until I wake up, so it could be 11 o'clock and then she'll jump out of bed when I jump out of bed. Or not that I jump out of bed. I never jump out of bed. That's a phrase I should never say ever. I crawl out of bed. I fall out of bed. I stumble out of bed. I cry out of bed, but I never jump out of bed. She, however, does jump out of bed, and she jumped down this morning and barked. And so I know she needs medication, and I forced myself awake and got up, went on a walk with her, and was out of bed at 9:30. I did take a nap again, or I did nap at 1:30, which is absurd. And I would love to talk to someone, if you're a medical professional or if you know of someone who would know information on this, I really think there's something wrong with my brain the beginning part of the day. So I woke up at like 9:30. I did stuff up until about 1. And then I started to feel, it's like this weird feeling where the stuff that I'm doing at that time doesn't feel clear. It feels very foggy. I feel very confused, kind of. I can't really focus. I can't concentrate. I can't do anything that would be creative or take like actual thought. Like I can just do emails and stuff at that point, at that, you know, portion of the day when I'm not feeling with it yet. But then around 1, I started to feel really dizzy almost. It's like a dizzy, not vertigo, but I don't know. It's just this really awful feeling that I need to lay down and I need to sleep and I need to reset my brain. So I ended up taking a nap at 1:30 and slept for about 45 minutes and then took a shower. And it's like I need to double wake up in the day. And that's also become a realization for me, or that's a new realization for me, that that's not just a thing that happens sometimes, that I need to double wake up, like do 2 wake ups before I'm actually awake. But that's what I do. And that's what it is. And so I always know, though, after I do my little nap post-wake-up, so my my post-wake-up nap, when I do that, I know I'll be okay for the rest of the day. But it's that, like, getting the lawnmower to start, like, like, pulling it, and I don't start. Then it starts, and then it stops. Then you got to do it again. And I just don't know if this is like a medical condition. I haven't really talked to anyone about it because I haven't seen a therapist in a really long time. And I haven't seen a psychiatrist in a really long time. And so I don't think at the time I was seeing them that this felt as prevalent or as much of a problem as it is. I think it's always been a problem, but I think I'm now accepting that it's like a reality and not a temporary thing. Because I don't know if it's just me, but I tend to look at these glitches or these problems as like a passing thing where it's like, oh, well, that's what I do, but I don't do it all. You know, it's like a one or 2 day thing. And then those 1 or 2 days add up to a whole week. And so finally it's setting in that's like, this is what I do. So if you know of anyone who can tell me if that's a medical condition, shoot me an email. I won't hold you accountable if for medical reasons or whatever, liability stuff. I don't know. Could you email someone that they have this XYZ problem? Probably not. But I recommend you do it anyway. So I'm looking forward to that next pin on the map, and I'm going to hold on until I get there. And if you are going through something similar, you should hold on until you get there as well, because that pin is coming. The train is rolling forward whether we want it to be or not, and so it's rolling us toward that next pin, even against our own will. So stay waiting for the pin. wait for the pin, wait for the pin. I think my life motto is, why meditate when you can sleep? I think that's a real problem for me. I should talk to my therapist about that as well. Last thing that I want to talk to my therapist about, I'm going to go back to the thing about the glasses, because while I was taping this, I had to stop and tape my other podcast. And on my other podcast, we had a trauma specialist on. And one of the first things that she said was, I'm not talking war trauma. I'm talking trauma from your home you grew up in that you didn't even know you were experiencing. And my ears went bing, like my ears got a little turned on. Because earlier, before that, when I took a shower, I was telling you guys I took a shower. Yes, I did. Can you believe it? I still can't. But when I took a shower, I was showering without my contacts in because of my GPC, my giant papillary David conjunctivitis, and I couldn't see in the shower. And I thought, I wonder how many things in my brain were firing, remembering being a kid, taking showers and not being able to see. Because obviously you can't wear your glasses in there. I wasn't showering with goggles. I was already looking ridiculous enough as it is without goggles. I can't imagine what I would have looked like with goggles. And I realize I've never liked showering. I've never liked bathing. Always have attributed it to laziness, depression. But I was having this little epiphany. What if I have trauma from every time I showered or took a bath, I couldn't see. I was essentially blinded. I mean, you can see shapes and things like that, but it's all fuzzy. If I was to get murdered in the shower, it would look like a very bad reenactment. You know how they always kind of have it fuzzy? Anyway, the whole point of the story for that is that I want to have this trauma specialist on the show, because I you know, part of me wants to not, and then the other part of me wants to really reinforce all these little minor things that I think were trauma. I basically just want her on the show to validate. Is this trauma? Is this trauma? Is this trauma? Is this trauma? I think this color wall is trauma, isn't it? This bedspread my mom got me as a kid was trauma. And showers were trauma. You know, vegetables, broccoli was trauma. I'm just kidding. I actually talk about how much I eat like a poor college student, but I do genuinely really like vegetables, preferably with a lot of salt and pepper on them. But anyway, speaking of trauma, let's get into Socially Challenged. All right, how do you guys like those little music transitions? Are they money or no good? So this week for Socially Challenged, I want to talk about dating. Eek. The reason I'm kind of wedging it in here to Socially Challenged is because I've already talked enough about friends and how I struggle making friends and wanting friends and things like that. But this week I'm going to talk about dating with depression, which I've definitely talked about a few times, but I want to talk about it more in depth right now because the last person I was dating, we were seeing each other for about 3 months, ended, I think, because I was too cynical, which was difficult because I thought that person also shared the same worldview. So I was really kind of playing it up and enjoying that we had a similar perspective on the world and on life. And turns out I was too cynical. And I think that can happen. And that makes sense. And I think the view of my world gets skewed because I do this podcast and then have a lot of people who listen that also maybe feel the same way, or I have people on the show that feel the same way. And so my equilibrium for what is normal everyday people cynicism is off because I being exposed to it in comedy and the world that I'm in is just little more accepting maybe of depression and cynicism than the actual world. So I don't know if you guys have faced challenges. If you're depressed and you've been dating, what the challenges are that you've faced. And I find that being in a relationship with depression, and not as in your dating depression. I mean, we all are in a relationship with depression. I'm definitely in a romantic relationship with depression. I sleep with it every night. We're inseparable. We go everywhere together, which isn't many places because it's usually in bed. What I'm saying is when you're in a relationship already and it's established and you have depression or it develops then, it seems a little bit easier because the person's already hooked. They're in. It's done. I mean, you didn't get married, but still you guys share an apartment together. And so it's really hard to separate. So once you're depressed, it's harder for the person to go somewhere. Whereas when you're in the beginning stages of dating and you're struggling with depression, it can scare people away. It can. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I think my case, I scared the person away. And part of me understands it and part of me is mad at it. But I think I have a special scenario because of this podcast. So when we were dating, it was called Mentally Chill. So when you have a podcast that's about mental illness and you lost a friend to suicide and you were depressed, it kind of quadruples the drama surrounding it. And so I don't blame the relationship not turning into anything on the podcast necessarily. Like, I blame things on my dad. Because at some point when you grow up, you have to stop blaming things on your podcast. But I am not at that point yet. So I am still on the blame train, even for this. So I think if I had maybe positioned this podcast slightly different to them, and while I positioned it differently, I was also cheery and happy a lot and more like a cheerleader type of girl, it would have worked. But then I would have been fake and lying, and it wouldn't have been a stable foundation for the relationship to begin. So I think all in all, it wouldn't have worked out regardless. But I learned that you don't want to hide yourself, but you also want to be accepted by new people. So I at first took it a little personally, and I actually had to explain to the person after. I say the person like I dated a man or a woman. It was a man. I had to explain to him just so that I could sleep easier at night. I am not the most cynical and depressed person in the world. I'm very, you know, out in everyday life, quote unquote, normal. Like, you wouldn't know necessarily. But given the circumstances with my podcast and with comedy, it's part of like my whole shtick. And I'm not that I was denying who I am, but I realized maybe the way I'm coming across is very morose, and I'm really not. I mean, I am, but I'm not. Like, when I'm not on this podcast and I'm out in public, I just look like a normal everyday person. Again, normal in quotations. But what you forget is that we're all in our own heads, seeing things from the perspective of our own experience. And so to me, I thought that this was all normal, and then kind of realized that it wasn't. And that's the irony, that I'm kind of fighting to break down this stigma, but yet suffering at the hand of it at the same time, in a way, as we all are. But I will be honest, part of me really got angry at who I am and the situation that I'm in, because I would have liked to just simply date someone without scaring them away because I'm too cynical. His exact words were, "We would spend too many days hating the world in bed together." And I was like, yeah, and what's wrong with that? That sounds like the dream relationship. Like, if I saw that on a Tinder bio, looking for someone to stay in bed and hate the world with, I'd be like, whoa, soulmate, you know? But I think there's part of him that was in denial about his own cynicism. Like, he was almost like a self-hating cynic. So he's looking for someone to balance him out, which I understand, because you don't want to have like too much darkness. Obviously, you need some light. But I think if you have that in common with each other, you can connect and really be on the same page and be the same human and then go find the brightness together. Whereas, you know, he wants someone to bring in that lightness. But I think he was searching for a girl to complete him the way we all look for someone to complete us when we're not in the right place looking for a relationship. So I do think it reflected on his mental state as much as mine. Like, I, being cynical and being someone who is depressed or isolated sometimes, it would of course be nice to have the opposite to an extent to get me out in the world and get me having fun. But also, would I be able to relate with that person to the extent that I'd be in a relationship with them? I don't really know. I think there's got to be some common ground. But I did have to explain when this happened that I do everything else. I can't remember what I said exactly, but it was something like, I had to say back after digesting this for a couple of weeks, I had to go back and just say, hey, for the record, I was a little I was defensive because it was kind of true, but I just wanted to be clear that, I said, I do all the things just like everyone else. I just enjoy ripping on the world a bit while I do those things because I think it's more fun and real and honest to do that. So if I'm going to go hiking, I'm going to make jokes about hiking. Of course, I'm going to enjoy the hike. I'm going to enjoy the view. I'm going to enjoy the fresh air. But I'm not going to be like, oh, hiking, you know, whatever about it. Like a wellness person or something. You know, that's who I am. But it doesn't mean I don't do those things. I like going out and about and, you know, anyway, it's me now justifying to myself, I think, that I'm not wretched. And I'm not saying because I have depression and stuff that I'm wretched. But that's how it felt when he phrased it to me, you know, and kind of put a mirror on me. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I love going, because I think one of the things, too, is I kind of joked about him going to some event because he was joking about it. Like, he was making fun of this Hollywood type event. And so then I did too. But I think he didn't want me to join in on that. So I wanted to just go back to everything and say, no, but like this event that I made fun of, I totally wanted to go. I would have gone if I was invited, and I would have been excited about, you know, getting dressed up and having pictures taken and all that narcissistic stuff. Like, but, you know, I couldn't go back and explain everything. But it's very difficult to date when you have depression. And so just know that if you're struggling with it, I have struggled with it. And hopefully it will not be an issue ever going forward again, because it really rips my heart out a bit that I have to feel a little bit broken, like not coming to someone fully. Anyway, so that's that. And now, finally, I am going to get to sweat the small stuff. Here comes some music. So it's not super fun to sweat the small stuff alone, like in my room by myself, because it's more fun to banter with someone about it. But I guess for this week's Sweat the Small Stuff, I'm going to talk about praying. And I know saying that sounds controversial. How dare I say someone can't pray? I'm not saying you can't pray. I'm not religious. I believe in God for safety purposes, like the just in case factor. Like, I think God's awesome. Hey, God, how's it going? I think you're amazing. This is to get me points in case anything is true that I will be like, no. Look, there's proof on a podcast that I believe. But praying specifically in airports or on airplanes. Now, here's my beef with it. I think this is where we need to pray the most. Actually, on my Facebook profile, my religion says only when I'm flying or something, or religious beliefs only when I'm flying. We all need whatever we can get when we're 30,000 feet off the ground. But I don't want to see anyone praying, because that reminds me or triggers me to think what we're doing is so ridiculous that people will be praying before we do it. I don't want to be reminded that this is a very scary, dumb thing that we're doing. So if I see like someone of a religion doing some sort of thing beforehand, or if you see someone do a little sign of the cross before they take off. I've seen these things, and it's very bothersome. Lovely, lovely that they're inviting God into their world, but a reminder to me that we might die. And it's just like this big red flag. We might die. We might die. That's what it looks like when someone's praying before we fly. Now, you can pray. Absolutely pray. I actually want you to pray. I just don't want you to do anything to indicate to us or the world that you're praying, because I want to pretend that this experience is very safe. And so, you know, any religious thing, like I said, just let's take it to the in the bathroom stall where there's a door closed. And I think there are some actually like prayer rooms occasionally at airports, maybe. But I just don't want to be scared. I don't want to be reminded that you're asking God to keep you alive, because that means I'm currently not asking God to keep me alive. And that, like I said, we're doing something very scary. Now that'll take me to something else very quickly for Sweat the Small Stuff, because I'm going in my mind for airports. I can just, of course, go on and on about airports. Everyone can. But this has happened to me a few times at an airport. Maybe not so much recently, because I think technology, we're staying updated to keep, you know, with the times, because there's a lot of now phone charging ports and things. But, and this can happen at places outside of the airport, of course, like the gym specifically. If an outlet isn't working or a machine isn't working, let the person know. Just let the person know, for our sanity, to know that we're in a society, that we're living together as one. Because I've had the situation where I go to plug in to a plug where clearly many people have already plugged in. And there's always one or two people that are at that plug, and they watch you plug in, sit there like a dope, see that your phone's not charging, and don't say anything, and then let you walk away and realize it on your own. Whereas you could have just said, that charger doesn't work, or that port doesn't work. We know you know. Like, I have been at the gym, and I've been on a treadmill, and I've seen someone come up to a machine that's kind of far away from me, so I can't just say, hey, that machine doesn't work. Otherwise, I would definitely take on the responsibility far enough away that I can't just say, hey, buddy, doesn't work. They'll go up to the machine. The person on the machine next to them won't say a word. And this is person number three that's come up and walked away now because the machine doesn't work. And that person doesn't tell them. They just let them get on the treadmill, get on the stair climber, see that it doesn't work, figure it out on their own, and let them go off with their tail between their legs, which I think is so not okay. It's unjust. We live in a society. This is a Seinfeld thing. We're living in a society. It's a George line. But so if you see someone trying to use something that doesn't work and you know it doesn't work, just let them know. It's so easy. It's not like you're starting a conversation with a hot dude or woman that you've been wanting to mack it with, and there's a lot of pressure to say the right thing. Some stranger you're never going to see again, or maybe see next week because you go to the same gym, or not see at the airport because you're at the airport and flying to different places, or you'll see when the plane crashes and you guys are both in heaven or hell, and then you're like, sorry I didn't let you know about the outlet back there. I really should have done that. That was kind of rude of me. And then you got to spend eternity with this person knowing that you didn't tell them about the outlet. Just tell them about the outlet. It makes the world a better place. This is the kind of thing I'm into. Making the world a better place by doing super small, little things that maybe, you know, if you're so focused on being in a group, like a save the world group, you're missing these little things. It's all, you got to start at the beginning. I've always had this theory that there's the hierarchy of needs, but in terms of being a good person. So you can't jump levels when it comes to being a good person. You've got to start at the foundation, which is doing things like putting your shopping cart back, telling people outlets aren't working, treadmills aren't working. And then you can go up to the next level, which would be going to rallies or becoming part of like environmentalist groups. You've got to work your way up. You can't just skip all the way to the top and say you're all about human rights and post it on Twitter and social media, but then not hold the door for someone. You see what I'm saying? Like, you've got to go through this level. And I see a lot of people doing level jumping with the good person thing. But I start at the bottom. I've stayed at the bottom. I don't work my way up. That's one thing, though. I do stay at the bottom. I don't plan on becoming any sort of like the social justice warrior type. I mean, I'm doing what I can with mental health, but beyond that, pretty much just here on the bottom. But I think that foundation is so important because you need that politeness in society to even get to the upper level of doing big, I don't know, walks for like charities. I don't know. I don't even know what they do up there on those levels. I'm just so down here at this old level. Anyway, all right, well, this has been interesting. It's very fun for me to talk into the abyss and hope that someone's listening. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if you want to support the show, please do go to patreon.com/KristenandChill. And actually, today, you guys, I'm just putting this out too late. It's too late to let you know that I'm doing a group hangout / live stream in a couple minutes on Patreon. If you happen to download this immediately, it's at 9:30. It's about 9:05 right now. So hopefully I will see you guys 9:30 Eastern time, which is 25 minutes here. So sorry about the short heads up. But if you do become part of Patreon, you will know in advance and you can come hang out with me on a Google chat and hang out. And we all see each other and talk to each other. It's like a weird group therapy / meeting of the minds. So again, patreon.com/KristenandChill. Little as a dollar, as little as a dollar it takes to become part of that. And if you don't want to do that, please feel free to, not feel free, please, I'm telling you to do this actually. Don't feel free to do it. Do it. There's no choice here. There's no free will in my religion. You have to give me 5 stars on iTunes. So if you have literally half a second, click 5 stars on iTunes. No less than 5 stars. Unfortunately, 4 stars and under doesn't exist for this specific iTunes account. So unfortunately, you just have to give me a 5-star rating. There's no choice really. And if you want to follow me on social media, please do. Come say hi. Come check me out. Who is this person behind the voice? Who is she? I got a beautiful message the other day that said, oh my God, this is you this whole time. Not that I'm saying, you know, it was very nice. I think when people hear me on here, either the way my voice sounds or the image I put out, they're not expecting much, which is good. I like to keep the bar low. So come be wowed on Instagram and find me at Chris Karn, KRISCARN, or on Twitter at Kristen Carney, KRISTENCARNEY. And unfortunately, Uncle Tony is still out on vacation. He's still at Palermo Pizzeria. It's a really big trip for him. And that pizzeria is beautiful this time of year. Just comes to life around the springtime. So he will be back next week. So make sure you tune in for more Uncle Tony dishing it out. And until then, remember, stay bored enough to listen, but not too bored. Bye, guys. Can you guys just be quiet for like 15 more minutes? I just really, really, really need to finish this episode. It's taking me forever. Sorry.